Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Biden says, buy America. What 10 billionaires could do with their money. Teamsters end a bitter strike in New York. And today on the show, our independent labor voice, Tom Buffenbarger, and labor writer Mark Gruenberg on union density in America. Good afternoon and welcome to the Tuesday, January 26th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on various platforms, and that includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify. And just about 2 weeks ago, we added another platform, Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and eventually give us a rating. We would appreciate a 5-star rating. All right. Two guests on the show today. We're going to kick things off with a dear friend, longtime contributor to the show, Mr. Thomas Buffenbarger, retired general president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. And he is here to give us his point of view of what's going on. And you know what? I emailed him yesterday. I said, Tommy, I don't even know where you want to start. I mean, there's so much that we can cover since he was last on the show at the end of December. I mean, we've got the insurrection, impeachment hearings coming up, big changes coming in the Department of Labor, all the cabinet positions, the executive orders of Joe Biden, Peter Robb leaving the National Labor Relations Board, and it wasn't very civil from what I understand, too. And there's another story I'm going to get into about what 10 billionaires, what 10 billionaires could do in America if they would be so kind. You know that's not going to happen, but nonetheless, it's a great story to talk about. The other part of this, too, you may recall Tommy talking about the Department of Commerce and how important that position is. And Biden has nominated the current governor of Rhode Island, Gina Raimondo, for Commerce Secretary. And apparently, she's got a really interesting background. She is a pro-business Democrat. She has experience in both public and private sector. And she sees economic vitality as an instrument of broad-based and shared prosperity. And apparently she's getting high marks. I'd like to get an opinion from Tom on this position. You don't hear too much about this position, but according to Bloomberg, they did a really good op-ed piece on this. It's one of the most important economic jobs in Washington. We're talking about trade policy, climate change. There's a lot of components to Commerce Secretary and the census, too. That's part of it as well. So we'll take a look at some of these cabinet positions with our independent labor voice, Tom Buffenbarger. Mark Gruenberg, our labor writer, will be joining us later in the show, and he's going to talk about union density. This is interesting because, and they do this every year, the Bureau of Labor Statistics out of Washington, they take a look at how many workers there are in America, how many are unionized, and they check year to year. Now, apparently, because of the pandemic, and this is the way I understand it, because of the pandemic, a lot of people lost their jobs, and there were union jobs involved in that. However, we saw an uptick in organizing. So the density, the percentages of workers that are unionized went up. So we'll run that all down. In fact, we have a breakdown of some states that we'll get into. And Mark's going to talk about that. And also, he did a really interesting piece on the future for workers with the new administration. He writes, there will be a brighter future for workers now that Joe Biden is president and Kamala Harris is vice president. But, this is a big but, it'll only happen if we all work for it. The bottom line is this. It's great that you have pro-worker politicians. That's good. but you need a movement to complement that. And he cites the administration of FDR. FDR was a pro-worker president. But keep in mind, what drove him was the masses of people in the Great Depression who were unionizing, saying, hey, you know what? We need a whole lot more to make ends meet, to support our families. And that's when you saw that groundswell. We need that same kind of groundswell today. Really interesting take, and Mark is going to talk about it right here on America's Workforce. All right, a couple of stories here. Buy America. President Biden signed an executive order yesterday imposing tougher rules on government procurement practices to increase purchases of products made in the United States, which is part of his campaign pledge to buy American and strengthen domestic manufacturing. Makes sense. The new policies will include tightening the procurement rules to make it harder for federal agencies to purchase imported products, revising the definition of American-made products, and raising local content requirements. There's a lot of products out there. They say they're American-made, but they're not 100% American-made. The automobile industry, for one, is like that. You can have a car, they'll call it American-made car, but only, I think it's like 65% of it has to be American. So the other 35% could be imported. Boy, they've changed that over the years. And apparently this policy is being very, very closely watched by our allies, which are hoping for friendlier trade relationships than during the Trump administration. So this is one to watch. We did get a comment, though, from Scott Paul, who heads the Alliance for American Manufacturing. This is what he said yesterday. We strongly support efforts to strengthen Buy America and other domestic content preference policies, and we are pleased that the president is initiating a process in the first week of his new administration. He goes on to say it is essential to close loopholes, reduce waivers, broaden coverage to more federal spending and more manufactured products, and strengthen origin standards for determining whether a product is produced in the United States. The law should mean what it says. An American product should be made in America. And the key word in that comment is the waivers. There's a lot of times you don't have to buy American, so they waive that part. Oh, we can't do it. And we talked about this on the show yesterday, rail cars. They don't make them here anymore. China makes them all. So how are you supposed to buy American? Maybe we should start making them again, don't you think? On Saturday, the 1,400 striking workers at the Hunts Point Market in the Bronx, the largest wholesale produce market in the country, mind you, ended a seven-day effort after ratifying a new three-year contract that will raise hourly wages by nearly $2, the largest pay increase in 30 years. The workers, members of Teamsters Local 202, demanded better wages for continuing to put their health at risk to keep New York City supplied with fresh fruits and vegetables during the pandemic. Hunts Point Market, believe it or not, is responsible for 60% of total produce sales in the city. And at least six workers have died. 300 have gotten sick after contracting the virus since the outbreak began. The week-long strike, which was joined by Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on Inauguration Day and received support from other Democrats, was the first in the market since 1986. Hunts Point used temporary workers and private security forces to keep the market operational during the strike, and several striking workers were arrested during the picket, but management eventually capitulated to the workers' demands. That is fascinating. 1,400 workers, 7 days, and they got the largest pay increase in 30 years. Now, a lot of people watched what happened there. Activists, labor groups, and other organizations keep asking why. Why workers who are called essential to the survival of our society, who have been forced to continue showing up for work in the middle of a pandemic, many of whom who have died, are also the lowest paid, least secure, and worst treated workers in the country. Why is that? Why is that? And then you compare those workers to the many people who are working remotely because they can't. So they're not in danger of the virus. And they're making more money. That's a good conversation to have. A really good conversation to have. We'll get the Teamsters on the show to talk more about this. Well, the coronavirus recession is over, if you ask the billionaires of the world. Yeah, listen to this. According to a report released yesterday by Oxfam, the top 1,000 billionaires collectively lost about 30% of their wealth when COVID-19 restrictions stalled global economies in March. Remember the stock market? It was almost 30,000. It dropped to below 20,000. Well, that's a good haircut. However, by the end of November, they made it all back. So for the world's richest, it took less than 10 months to recover the financial losses caused by the pandemic. For the world's poorest, Oxfam estimates it'll take more than 10 years. More than 10 years. Paul O'Brien is vice president of Oxfam America. He said, while a wealthy minority have amassed great fortunes before and during the pandemic, the majority of the world's population have been struggling to survive on poverty wages and without access to decent health care or education. Billionaires are a sign of economic sickness, not health. They are a symptom of a broken economy. Endemic, according to the report, threatens to undo the progress of more than two decades of declining global poverty. The World Bank has estimated more than 200 million people may sink into poverty as a result of COVID-19's economic effects, especially in low-income countries and in rich ones, including the United States. Now, according to Oxfam's calculation, based on poverty data from the World Bank and wealth data from Credit Suisse and the Forbes Billionaires list, the world's 10 richest people, and that includes Jeff Bezos, CEO of Amazon, and Elon Musk, founder of Tesla. The world's 10 richest people added $540 billion to their collective net worth in the last three quarters of 2020. If they handed over around $80 billion, just a slice of that, they could keep those imperiled millions above the poverty line for a year, if they handed it over. With the remainder of their 2020 profits, those same 10 billionaires could pay for both rounds of the vaccine for every person on the planet and still come out ahead. They figure the cost at $9 per dose, a total expenditure of $141.2 billion for the world's inhabitants. Right now, we have 7.8 billion people living on Earth. So they can pay for the vaccine for every one of them and still be rich. Is this amazing? There's one more component to the story. Jeff Bezos could have personally paid each of Amazon's 876,000 employees a one lifetime bonus of $105,000 and still be as wealthy as he was at the beginning of the pandemic. How about that? Amazing, amazing story. All right, we have to break. You're listening to America's Workforce, our independent labor voice, Tom Buffenbarger, coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange. News, talk, sports, and workforce politics. The fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you are exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce, where you can find us on Facebook, AWF Union Podcast, and also follow us on Twitter at AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to our live line. Rejoin our independent labor voice. That would be Tom Buffenbarger, former general president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. You can find them online at goiam.org. He has since retired and has become our independent labor observer. And Tommy, I was talking at the top of the show. Last time you were on was the end of December. And my God, I don't even know where to start. There's so many things that have happened. But welcome back to America's Workforce. And I know it's kind of late, but Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you and your listeners, Flash. And let me tell you, it's nice to be able to emerge from my bunker, because I only live about 18 miles from the White House.
Yeah.
And Washington today is a fortress. Super security around the city ever since the January 6th insurrection. It's hard to believe from December to today, all we have witnessed happen to our country. It's mind-boggling. And the news just keeps coming. So everybody should strap in and get ready for a real roller coaster ride.
Oh, boy. No, you thought it was a roller coaster during the Trump administration. Look how the next couple of weeks are going to be real rocky, especially with these impeachment hearings coming up. But I want to talk about the Commerce Department. I remember having a conversation with you more than once, as a matter of fact, on the importance of that position. But before we get that, I want to read to you an opinion piece from Bloomberg News, and they hailed Biden's picks for cabinet cabinet positions like Marty Walsh for labor, good guy, Marcia Fudge for housing and urban development, and Pete Buttigieg for transportation. And Bloomberg points out how important to have mayors doing the work of governing the country, because you think about what mayors do. I mean, they're on the street level. These are all former mayors that are going to be in Washington. That is something that should be highlighted. Secondly, they cited one of Biden's picks, Gina, is it Raimondo? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah, Raimondo? Raimondo.
Okay, now she is the current governor of Rhode Island, and Biden wants her in the Commerce Department, which you told me, I guess it doesn't get much fanfare, but it's pretty important. I'd like to hear your point of view on the Commerce Department and how that relates to workers in America today.
It doesn't get the recognition it does deserve, but the Commerce Department is critical. Almost as critical as the Labor Department for working people, because they help set the stage and offer guidance and support for industries and manufacturers and all kinds of folks to sell products, to sell what we make. And if we do a lot of that, if we sell a lot of stuff and make it easy to sell it here and abroad, then that means more jobs for American workers, and there's a direct correlation. So I'm old enough to remember when a guy named Ron Brown was Bill Clinton's Secretary of Commerce. The Machinist Union had a closer relationship with the Secretary of Commerce than we had with the Secretary of Labor, and we had a great relationship with all of them. But Ron Brown was very active moving and selling and encouraging the purchase of U.S.-made products like no other Secretary of Commerce we've seen. And during his tenure, and he was unfortunately killed doing his job in a plane crash with a lot of other people when their plane crashed in Croatia. But he was over in Europe to sell American-made products. And every one of those, he was proud to say, the ones that were unionized, that they were unionized, and this is good for everyone. And I just can't tell you, our job ranks grew immeasurably with the help of the Secretary of Commerce. And he drew us into discussions and meetings and was just very helpful, not just for machinist members, but for all workers. And that's the role the Secretary of Commerce can play. Personally, I was hoping a guy named Leo Hendry would have gotten the job, but Gina Raimondo is a successful governor in Rhode Island, and that state relies on manufacturing to succeed. And she's done a good job protecting her industries and putting them forward. So I think she'll do a good job. And you combine that with these other cabinet picks you spoke of. Marty Walsh, the mayor of Boston, the IAM represents a group of city workers there. So we've had direct relationships with him. He is a strong leader. He is very fair, and he demands the best of everyone, and he doesn't mind sticking up for the people who provide the work, whether it's in transportation, whether it's keeping the cities safe and clean and maintained. He did a great job. Now as Secretary of Labor, I just see good things happening. Maybe we'll start to enforce some of our safety laws again to protect workers, and funny way, the employers too. That's all part of his job responsibilities, as well as, people don't realize this, the protections for pension plans come under the jurisdiction of the Department of Labor.
Oh, yeah.
Secretary of Labor. And maybe we'll just see some attention paid now to protecting workers' hard-earned pensions. And I'm looking forward very much to see what he does in that field.
That is a huge issue, and that's one issue we're going to stay on here at America's Workforce. Pensions in America, especially the multi-employer pensions with the building trades, and the Teamsters have been fighting that issue for a long, long time. Tom, if you don't mind, I want to switch gears here a little bit and talk about what Biden announced yesterday. That was his proposal to buy American goods as much as possible. And I know over the years there have been so many waivers. And in fact, we had an interesting conversation yesterday with Greg Regan on behalf of the Transportation Trades Department. And Biden's pick for Transportation Secretary is Pete Buttigieg, another mayor. And he was grilled last week about buying American, like, for instance, rail cars. You can't even buy them in America today because they're all made in China. So, I mean, we got a lot of work to do, But speaking from your position as the former head of the Machinists Union, I mean, you've seen this, especially what in the defense industry, where they decided not to buy American. There were waivers after waivers after waivers. Can you speak to that, Tom?
Yes, and Flash, I was so glad to see President Biden put this issue up front and foremost at the beginning of this administration. For decades, not months or years, decades, the machinists and all the other manufacturing unions, steelworkers, auto workers, have been fighting with our own government about when they seek to procure items necessary for our defense, the Buy American provision was a no-brainer. Why would you want to offshore the production and manufacturing of items we need to defend this country? And in time of an emergency, would we have a reliable partner then to keep us supplied or even be able to get the product here? And the answer is no. And I'll cite the vaccines as a good example and PPE equipment needed for frontline healthcare workers today. It all comes from overseas. So buy American for the things we need first and foremost is a no-brainer. And we've clamored for so long to have an administration make that claim and fight for us to help us secure that practice, especially from the Pentagon. And here, President Biden opens up his term as president demanding exactly that. I'm ecstatic about it. Now, that doesn't mean we're out of the woods on this. We're going to have to fight employers, and we're going to have to fight our own Pentagon to assure they do apply the Buy American standards to their purchases and acquisitions. And this will, in fact, create jobs in America for workers of all stripes. And I just can't say enough in appreciation that this came about early on, because to have the president as an ally, really and truly, it means a phone call to somebody who's got their head in a dark spot saying, what are you doing? To defend our country, we have to make the stuff here. Again, no-brainer. If we lose the ability to manufacture the means of our defense, we lose the ability to manufacture the means of our prosperity. And this is a simple equation, and most workers out there get that. It's the people at the top who run the agencies of government and business that never see us or connect with us that say, let's go to the place that has the cheapest wages possible. The old Jack Welch from GE saying, he said it on Boca Raton, Florida. The ideal factory would be built on barges moored to the docks of the nation that paid the cheapest wages. And that philosophy permeated government and government acquisition. And we've got to get rid of that thinking. So I'm happy about it.
this lowest bidder thing, I understand they want to control costs. I get that. But there's got to be some standards in there. And I keep going back to the conversation I had with Leo Girard. You remember Leo when he was
very
heading.
Well. Good
yeah, the steel workers, and they were building a bridge out in California. And they went to, Schwarzenegger was the governor at the time. They went with the lowest bidder on the steel for that bridge, and it came from China. Tom, that steel was rusting and falling apart before they even finished building the bridge. Now, was that smart to go to lowest bidder? That's what I mean. They gotta revise these things so they can continue to move America forward.
Flash, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and I remember this story very well, said it was to control costs. American steel was too high. So they bought it from China. And you're correct. They didn't even finish building the bridge before they had major structural issues with failing steel. So, you know, they had to buy more steel, and they had to buy a whole lot of American steel that could do the job. So where was the cost savings in that
exactly
plan of action that he had? When you pay to do the job twice, something's wrong. And that's what happened in California.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, I haven't been there for a while, especially during the pandemic. I will not use that bridge.
I hear you. I hear you. I don't blame you. All right, we have to break. Tom Buffenberger, our independent labor voice on the show. We'll continue the conversation. More to come. Like I said, there's a lot to talk about. Later in the show, our labor writer, Mark Gruenberger, is going to run down some figures on union density. Now, we lost some people in the unions because of the pandemic. I mean, because of layoffs, some people died as well. But union density went up. He'll explain it all right here on America's Workforce. Back in a few.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
If you came across a child struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? By their clothes? Their age? The way they speak? Would you recognize a 13-year-old boy who gets into fights at school?
Not because he's a bully, but because he's hungry?
Or a 2-year-old girl who cries all night?
Not because she's sick, but because she went to bed without enough to eat.
Or maybe a 9-year-old boy who hopes a friend invites him to a sleepover.
Not for fun, just so he can have dinner.
Or a 15-year-old girl who goes for walks over lunch,
so her friends won't know she doesn't have anything to eat.
I am the 1 in 7 American children who struggle with hunger. Kids you pass by every day but never knew were hungry. I am Child Hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America, 200 Food Banks Strong.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce. And don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and most recently, Pandora. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Tom Buffenberger, our independent labor voice, former general president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. So, Tom, you mentioned that you live right outside the Capitol, 18 miles from the Capitol. You watch the insurrection. It's hard to believe that there's a big chunk of Americans that support what happened. They may not be vocal about it, but nonetheless, we have politicians that that really should be charged because they, like Trump, did not believe in our election process. And here's the crazy thing. You were telling me off the air that a lot of them went to what, Ivy League schools? Can you give us some more details on that, Tom?
Sure. You've got like Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley. You've got the Marco Rubios. All these people are extremely well-educated at Harvard and Yale, et cetera, and they kept repeating these baseless claims about election fraud and that the insurrection was going to happen because the election was stolen from Donald Trump. Now, these folks have been exposed and informed to the most sensitive information that's out there, all of which confirms, even by Republicans, the election was safe, secure, and Joe Biden won. And yet you have these ridiculous antics, both on the Senate floor and in the House, by the Trump followers, my favorite being Jim Jordan, challenging yet today the validity of the election. Now, I'm beginning to wonder, with the education they've received, it seems like a tremendous failing for such schools like Harvard and Yale and Princeton and Stanford and others, the Ivy League group, because if this is the best they can turn out, there's something really, really wrong. And I don't know how this ends up playing out now that we have the impeachment trial scheduled to start. I don't know what these guys will do when it comes their turn to speak in the well of the Senate. But to disregard the will of the American people with garbage is unconscionable. And I wonder where their values are founded. I really think America needs to have a serious discussion about how we teach respect for the law, how we practice the civility that such an education should bring, instead of clowns jumping up and down and all around, baseless conspiracies, and all trying to become the next Donald Trump. America doesn't need another Donald Trump. And I'm hoping that people start to wake up to this fact as all of this unfolds. There's going to be even more stuff come out. It's coming out here in D.C. about the corruption that took place with the Justice Department and Trump. And it's to use the government and an agency as the Justice Department to justify overthrowing an election is outrageous. And that's not what America is about or what it stands for. And, you know, I don't care who you support, what your political affiliations are. The fact is, truth and justice and what's right have to win out here.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not, we live with facts. And it's shocking to see what went on in the White House. And I'm just hoping that wisdom, that spark of wisdom and justice comes through with the Senate as this trial unfolds.
Well, we have that, and we also have trials, soon-to-be trials, of all the insurrectionists, and there were about 800 of them. And from what I've been gathering, less than 100 have actually been charged. And I just hope they're vigilant. You mentioned the Justice Department. You know there's a lot of people saying, oh, you know what? Let's just move on. They got out of hand that day. And that's the part that scares me, that we don't have enough tough prosecutors to go after them all. And to your point, getting back to Trump, did you see the Washington Post story yesterday? Trump told, while he was in office for 4 years, over 30,000 lies. 30,000 lies, and half of them came in the last year in office.
he can't tell the truth. So every time he opens his mouth, it's a lie.
No.
And Flash, when we talk about the insurrectionists, if these are the kind of people that support President Trump who would go into our nation's capital, into the rotunda and the hallway areas, and defecate on the floor and track it throughout the building, surely, the American people have a better sense than to say, well, that's okay.
Yeah.
It's not.
And
what they did, threatening to kill lawmakers, I don't care if they're Republican or Democrat, you don't threaten to kill anybody.
Yeah.
And then to see so many of them adhere to their, at the insurrection, there were a group holding up their Bibles. I somehow don't think anywhere in the Bible it authorizes an insurrection that includes murder and physical harm and threats to other human beings. There's something fundamentally wrong with how information is being processed by the radical Trump supporters, and it's got to change.
Yeah,
we want a country with a bright future for everybody, not one based on fear and intimidation.
I know, Tom. Biden's got a lot on his plate here. The next couple of weeks are going to be very, very interesting, and I hope he gets the right people in the Justice Department and all levels of government, because they've been polluted. They've been polluted over the last couple of years, no doubt. All right, my friend, you take care. Be safe. Always good to hear your voice, your comments, your passion. I know you still have it. So I'm sure we'll have plenty more to talk about 1 month from now, all right?
Oh, absolutely. And since we'll have a shorter period of time, I got a feeling the politicians will try to cram in a lot of stuff for us between now and the end of February. So
you got it.
I look forward to it. And Flash, the best to you and your listeners. And again, Happy New Year to everybody out there.
Tom Buffenberger, our independent labor voice. Quick break. When we come back, our labor writer, Mark Gruenberg, on union density in America, right here on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong, and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro. Trial lawyers.
1 in 3 adults has prediabetes. 1 in 3. That means it could be you, your football buddy. Your football buddy. Or you, your best man, your worst man. you, your dog walker, your cat jogger. While 1 in 3 adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And welcome back to America's Workforce. Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number 2 right now. Welcome back to the show. Our labor writer, the editor of Press Associates Union News Service, Mr. Mark Grunberg. He's here to tell us 2 things. Number 1, about union density in America, and also the future for workers with the new administration. Hey, Mark, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome, and good afternoon, everyone.
All right, Mark, talk to me about union density. So apparently, I guess less people working, membership declined by over 300,000, but density went up. Can you explain what happened here last year?
Well, in one word, the coronavirus put more people proportionally who were non-union out of work than it did for union people. So in other words, union people lost jobs, and thus you have this 321,000 person decline. But so many more non-union people lost jobs that as a result, the total workforce went down like by something like 9 million people, and those were mostly non-union people. And so as a result, union density went up.
And I see right now we have 14.25 million union brothers and sisters in America, 14.25 million. And the density rose by 0.5% to 10.8%. That's overall public and private. Now, and there's more. I know, I think public in the public sector, you're looking at over 30% density. But you've got a breakdown. Let's take a look at some of the states. And apparently the Northeast, Great Lakes, and Pacific Coast states, they are the ones that are heavily unionized?
Yeah, and that's been the pattern for more than a decade. Trying to break into the South is still, in so many words, a tough row to hoe. And the same thing goes for the mountain states. The dead last states, the three that have the lowest union density, are South Carolina is dead last, North Carolina is second to last, and Utah is third to last. That should tell you something. Whereas you have the northeastern states like Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan. Ohio's union density is 13.2%. Pennsylvania is 13.5, and Michigan is just ahead of both of them with around 15.2%. So it's quite a difference in so many words, depending on where you live.
I see Hawaii is number 1, 23.7% union density, followed by New York at 22%, and then California is 16.2%. You also have in your article that I guess unionized women increased their numbers. What happened in that arena?
Well, it's not so much that unionized women increased slightly by about 40,000, 50,000. Unionized men were the ones who lost jobs to the coronavirus. So as a result, the two numbers are also practically equal, certainly more equal than they were in prior years. Same thing, by the way, for public and private. Basically, you now have a flat tie between the number of unionized workers in the public sector and the number of unionized workers in the private sector. There's something like a 60,000 difference in favor, quote unquote, in favor of the private sector. And that's sort of within the survey's margin of error, if you will.
Gotcha. All right. Let's move on to the future of workers. And I saw this op-ed piece you did, and we're going to see some changes here in the weeks and months ahead. I'm going to let you just take it from there, because I know a lot of people are excited about the new administration, and you're one of them. So go ahead.
Yes. Okay. Well, here's what we said. There will be a brighter future for workers now that Democrat Joe Biden is president and Kamala Harris is vice president, but only if we work for it hard. True, just the first day and a half, this was written last week, of their four-year term has already produced a marked shift in tone and in policies. Gone are anger, chaos, hate, misogyny, corporate favoritism, racism, and xenophobia, to name just a few characteristics of the departed GOP Donald Trump regime. Also gone are two big inhumane Trump actions, his racist Mexican wall, and his trying to summarily eject anyone black or brown who's migrated to the country. Also eventually to be gone, though it will take time, are Trump's anti-worker policies and edicts that even descended to ordering shop stewards to defend federal workers against bosses' biases and discipline on their own time and on their own dime. Still to be replaced, the $1.7 trillion Trump GOP corporate bonanza of a tax cut for companies and the rich, or, worst of all, Trump's complete and fatal fiasco in mishandling the coronavirus pandemic, a plague that kills black and brown and white workers, not his friends. In their place are Biden's calm, reliance on expertise, trust in regular people, plain speaking, and a pledge to tell the truth, not 30,000 lies, which was Trump's final four-year count. Also in their place are Biden's immediate moves to take national control of the pandemic response, including aiding and not trashing millions of economically hurting workers. There will be other changes then down the road, because the agenda of the government, an agenda that affects you and me, will be set by a pro-union president who spent decades commuting to D.C. on unionized Amtrak trains, a pro-worker VP who earned the trust of her California labor constituents, a Democratic Senate majority leader who listens to workers as well as capitalists, and a Democratic House Speaker who almost always heeds workers. There's quite a difference between Biden, Harris, Charles Schumer, and Nancy Pelosi running the show versus Trump, GOP Vice President Mike Pence, GOP Senate Leader Mitch McConnell, and Republican House speakers doing so before Pelosi became Speaker in 2019. But those four top leaders can't do it alone. Indeed, politicians, in a sense, can't lead. They must be pushed. Just as FDR told progressives pushing workers' causes and civil rights in the 1930s and early 1940s. Paraphrasing him, Roosevelt would reply, quote, "I agree with you. Now make me do it," unquote. In other words, get out there and put the pressure on. So as workers, we'll have to make them do it. We didn't do so when Barack Obama took over and Republicans sliced anti-recession economic aid in half and directed much of the remainder to bailing out banks and brokers. Nor when Obama weakened the ACA to win over the rapacious, venal, and vicious health insurance. We cannot afford to make that mistake again. From economic aid to help the hurting due to the coronavirus depression, to workers' rights, to comprehensive immigration reform, to tackling global warming, to battling racial injustice and white supremacy, we'll have to campaign in the streets and in the Capitol's corridors, pushing Biden, Harris, Schumer, and Pelosi to do the right thing. That's the future we face as workers, no matter the issue, be it policies or money or just plain civility. Because they, the leaders, all alone, are not going to do it for us.
Well said, my man. We certainly need an army, because there's a lot of work to do. Great job. Thank you so much, Mark Gruenberg, The Future for Workers with Joe and Kamala. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the Heat and Frost Insulators and the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.